Welcome to Editing Loud with some of South Africa's top journalists explaining the events of the week. Panel, this week we had the collapse, essentially, of VBS Bank. It's been one of the big stories, and it's created a lot of backlash on social media platforms as if Twitter was a reasonable place to live. I suppose just to get start off with, Hillary, can you explain what actually happened? What actually happened to VBS? Who is it, and what went down?
VBS is the old vendor building society, so a real homeland legacy there, which had chosen to incorporate itself as a mutual bank at some point, so not a fully licensed bank, which is material to the story. And over the last 3 years, it has grown incredibly rapidly on the back of taking mainly municipal deposits. Now, as a mutual bank, it's not allowed to take municipal deposits, and municipalities are not, in fact, allowed to put their money there in terms of the municipal legislation. So they had been warned, and there are two sort of separate sets of issues. The one is the Treasury's issue with municipalities telling them it was illegal, and the other is the Reserve Bank's issue, which is that they were taking an absolutely excessive amount of risk. In other words, depending on a few large lumpy deposits from municipal funders who, in addition, were illegal, for this very fast growth in their loan book. Now, what's interesting about the story, this is the bank, remember, that made granted Jacob Zuma a home loan to cover the costs of Nkandla. What's interesting about the story is that they seem to have carried on doing what they were warned not to do with absolute impunity through last year. And the feeling is that they did this because they felt they had political cover. So, for example, they were warned, municipalities were warned not to put their money there in August by the Treasury. Between August and December, the number of municipalities banking with VBS went from 13 to 21. So, in other words, this is a story of, I suppose we will find out whether it was dodgy, fraudulent, or just mismanaged, very, very poor banking management. But that it was very poor banking risk management, there's no question of. And as happens with most banks that manage their risk very, very poorly, eventually depositors started pulling their money. The bank had no cash to meet those payments. The shareholders, interestingly, would not help. They were approached by the Reserve Bank for a bailout. They refused to put any more money in, and the bank was put into curatorship on Sunday by the Reserve Bank.
Tim Cohen, I mean, this is a case of a bank not handling itself very well at all. How did it act illegally? How did it think it could act illegally for so long and assume that it wouldn't cause any problems? Hillary talks of political cover. Was that from the Jacob Zuma loan? Why did it believe it could do this?
Well, we don't know for a fact. We have a lot of circumstantial evidence, as Hillary was talking about. So basically, I think, you know, they did the South African thing, which is, you know, they relied on this nebulous thing called connectivity. If you've got connectivity, you're fine. You can do what you want. You know, the laws are, you know, just guides, essentially, to the... and it really came back unstuck. Ironically, it came unstuck because one of the municipalities, asked for, withdrew their deposits. And as soon as that happened, and the bank couldn't cover the withdrawal, it triggered on the, you know, the national legislation on the national payment system. From that point on, the Reserve Bank was, you know, had to become involved. One of the indications that it was that this was a that, you know, it was relying on connectivity was that as soon as the bank was put into curatorship by the Reserve Bank, there was an outrage on Twitter about, you know, the black bank, you know, has been closed by the Reserve Bank, which is, you know, they really didn't have any choice, you know. But
and I think it's also important to realize that when something like this happens, it's always the last resort for the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank would have been working with these guys, or trying to work with these guys, for months, and was saying, your business model is not sustainable, you're taking too much risk, you've got to do something about it. And they were making promises that they were going to change their model, they were going to get other sources of funding and so on. So behind the scenes, which we didn't know about at the time, was a whole process of engagement. And these guys do seem to have, either they were such bad bankers that they didn't even get it, or they just took no notice until things really came unstuck. And it has, on Twitter, as you say, and in fact, even from sort of political parties such as the EFF and from the labor movement, the Reserve Bank's been accused of sort of sinking it because it was a black bank. In fact, it sank because it was a bad bank, not because it was a black bank.
But Ron Darby, what do you think is the reason for the fact that so many people just don't understand the model, the way banking is supposed to work? And I suppose the disconnect in this case between what a bank is supposed to do and what it did.
I mean, I think the key issue is when people are looking for a black bank, what exactly, how will it operate differently from supposedly a white bank? I think banks are banks, they do the same thing, lend out money, interest rates. So people, I guess they suspect a black bank will be friendlier to me, for instance, but it has to make money in some way, in some form. So that means it'll act generally like a normal bank. So, I mean, with this bank, I can only see the whole the Zoom Connect, right? Because Prasa, I mean, it was a month ago, Sunday Times had a front page story saying Prasa was being pressured to put R1 billion into VBS.
And well, we can now see why.
Why. And then it was headed by the former Transport Minister, Joe, who was left, who was kicked out by Ramaphosa, who was a clear Zuma lackey, and his chief advisor was Dudu Mieni. So you can see then that this is like VBS. As soon as the bank started cutting services to people, politically, what's that term? Politically exposed individuals?
When the whole group of thinking about people.
Was like when I saw Jimmy Mani, what's his name? Jimmy Mani talking about this, it was clear to me, okay, clearly it's for you banks. When you had Tutugile Zuma's daughter having a credit card, VBS credit card on Twitter, told me that perhaps this bank saw a chance, like just like Bank of Baroda said, okay, we'll bank the Guptas. I suspect this bank just banked those particular faction of Zuma which were exposed. So hence, the noise came from that faction in particular. I don't know why EFF is jumping into the lot and talking about black banks, but which is a bad bank that was going into retail banking, a place they've never been before. They weren't supposed to be in that area, and I think that's why they were just really exposed. And you can see the political 18 months or so.
What is staggering is you're meant to be a fit and proper person to run a bank, and yet these guys were knowingly breaking the law for years, and then had the chutzpah to complain about it when they were caught. I mean, how is it that you as a banker think it's legitimate to break the law for so many years? How do you reconcile?
I mean, this bank just made R1 million profit, was it 4 years ago? So like 2 years ago. So it tells this bank has been long in trouble. Now it's got to this point.
Hilary, I was going to ask.
I think one of the problems is one of the issues that is that it was a mutual bank, and mutual banks are more likely
regulated.
What
is a mutual bank compared to a commercial bank?
A mutual bank is a sort of... They came out of the old idea of mutuals, which was sort of almost partnerships. But in fact, now it's a sort of a lower grade of bank. It's meant for small cooperative type banks. It's not meant for big lumpy municipal deposits. Mutuals are more lightly regulated than are fully licensed commercial banks, which is why municipalities are not allowed to put their deposits with mutual banks. But I mean, it's inherently could be a promising sort of structure for smaller banks, community smaller banks. To set up shop, and so one shouldn't write off the model. But it is true that in this case, it was more likely regulated than a full-on commercial bank would have been, and belatedly, and it shouldn't have been taking in the kind of business that it was taking in, and belatedly it did apply for a banking license, a full banking license, but that was actually last week, as it turned
out.
Last minute.
I mean, Tim, I mean, one of the issues is that Hillary wrote about it quite cogently in the Business Day, which is the publication you have in front of you that you might know.
Oh, yes, this one. Oh, yeah.
But she talked about how the fact is it's not just black banks who fail. It's essentially in 2002 when you had the entire second-tier banking system go down.
Mm-hmm.
We had
yes.
Sambo go down, PSG Investment Bank, Brait Bank, AMB
Regal
Holdings.
Treasury.
Yeah, Regal Treasury, which you know, was for actual fraud. So the perception that just black banks are treated harshly by the regulators, is that supported by the fact that by the evidence?
No, I mean, it's hard to do this, but if you're trying to read into the minds of the people who are complaining about what the Reserve Bank did here, their argument is that the Reserve Bank should have done more to support it and keep it in business and keep it going. That was their but you know, I just don't think that the Reserve Bank had a choice here because, as you say, you know, when a bank breaks the law, then you know you're into a different ballgame. You know, then there's all kinds of liability that that you're attracting towards the bank, and I think the Reserve Bank did the right thing.
And we should remember whose money this is. I mean, not just VBS, but every other bank. The money belongs to us. In the case of VBS, the money belonged to municipalities, the deposits, and to an orphans fund, if you look at Business Day's front page today. A pension fund which was for widows and orphans of mine workers. This is your money and mine that banks are looking after. And that is why they have to be so, or not looking after, as the case may be. And that is why they have to be so tightly regulated. And depositors could really lose money in this case, and a lot of them are stock fells and black individuals.
Normally an African bank is in about a collapse, and there's all fear about stability. There'll be a run on the bank. There's no run on VBS. It tells you like exactly when you say it's a black bank. So how many black customers did VBS have in its existence, right? Like there's, I think it was maybe just a pocket for a few select individuals to get access to banking who were barred from the apps and the like, especially with the Gupta noise. And they, unfortunately, they bang loud drums on Twitter and have huge followings, and they stir up this whole black bank narrative. And here we are discussing black banks as an issue where, there's a black managed bank in Standard Bank. Let's put pressure on Sim Shabalala to lend more to black people or something like that. There's a black managed bank, if we want to have that argument. But black show, it's just, it's kind of irritating the whole.
I did have a couple of high profile clients. One of them was somebody called Jacob Zuma, who borrowed, I think it was 9.7 million from them around that, to repay his loans his debt for Nkandla. Yeah.
Which no other commercial bank would have given to a 75 year old man. Was paid off over 20 years.
With
and
a patchy credit
and
history.
Just in case and frankly, he's wondering, the curator will still demand and service that loan. Yes. And if VBS customers think that they don't have to pay their loans, they absolutely do. Yes. In fact, if they don't, and that's one of the fears one always has with curatorships, that the curator goes in and finds that the loans are bad too. Mm. And of course, if those loans are bad, then there's nothing with which to, you know, pay the depositors. The shareholders are bound to lose their money. But you know, I think for
but
all
that single
we do
loan,
have a
that yeah, single Zuma that loan was equal loan. To twice their profit for 2016. Yes. Yeah. So the profit was 4.5 million or something, and they lent double that to Jacob Zuma for political cover, which is a high price to pay for political cover.
I'm always soft on PIC, but I kind of like, oh, okay, Dan Maggi, Elizabeth. But again, here we are, PIC, 21%, again, a bad, like,
27.
Like, so Magilla, I guess he collapsed the CIO position, right, and put it back in the CEO's office. So I guess the only person to argue to it.
Daniel Machila, the CEO of the PIC. The other thing is that Jacob Zuma, the very person who we're talking about getting a loan from VBS, that might or might not be a bad loan, we'll have to see. This week it emerged that he'd actually spent 15.3 million of taxpayers' money fighting the spy tapes case, fighting to avoid prosecution. I think that's a figure that should outrage the public. Do you not think, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really bizarre situation where, you know, in most court cases, you know, it's a gamble to go to court. And because you're paying so much for just being there, you know, it's a kind of impediment on crazy frivolous attempts to you know, just see whether or not you can find a judge who comes to a different conclusion. You know, so it's a very high stakes game. But you know, for government, for a lot of government people, there's no disincentive. Because you're not paying for the legal defense, so your instruction to your legal defense is find something. that it's not anyway, you know. But I mean, and that's why we've had so many frivolous cases, and that's why I mean, so you know, it is a transfer of wealth, you know, but it's a transfer of wealth from taxpayers
to lawyers.
I mean,
well, we love lawyers.
I think he should have to pay that back. Would that be unreasonable?
And you know, for future, is it possible, would it be possible, guys, to put in some sort of model where if state functionaries are running up big legal bills, there's some sort of transparency, like if they get to 5 million, they have to start disclosing much is being spent and what it's being spent on.
Even more than that, after, you know, everything after a certain level is for your own account.
What is intriguing is that Cyril Ramaphosa's office confirmed to us this week that the state will also pay for Zuma's defense should he be criminally charged, which now seems likely. Yes. Which I suppose means that... But the thing is that if he loses that case, then he will have to repay the money, which might indicate that VBS might have a whole lot more dodgy loans on his books.
Yes. I mean, we should make one point about VBS, and that is that depositors are, to a certain extent, protected.
Up to
a certain amount, What is it?
50,000. Very small retail depositors.
Yeah.
Look, I think we may not have a problem with... I mean, it's not a black bank problem, but South Africa traditionally has had a problem with small banks falling over. And there are some new small banks coming into the system, such as Discovery and Time, and... it's about time we got some new dynamic small banks in the system. It would be even great if they were black owned as well. But I think let's hope that the next crop of small banks will do better than the last crop.
And that's the word from Hilary Joffe on banking. Join us after the break for more on other issues in the news. Welcome back to Editing Aloud. Panel, if there's one person who might deserve a person must go hashtag, it would be this person who's running SARS called Tom Moyane. Tom Moyane has been there for a few years and has wreaked untold havoc at the place. Hilary, your thoughts on why Tom Moyane should go. Can you give us a concise argument for why the man should not be in the position he is in? He should do a Malusi Gigaba and disappear from our eyesight.
I think even Malusi Gigaba fell out with him in the end. Look, what's disturbing actually is that Tom Moyane knows that he's going to go sooner or later. His contract is certainly not going to be renewed, that's for absolutely sure, and I really doubt he should be allowed to serve out his contract. So the disturbing thing that's been happening in the last couple of weeks is that he's obviously kind of going in for the kill, knowing that he's soon going to be booted. So number one, we've had SARS awarding a whole bunch of contracts to debt collectors. Now, I may be wrong, but I'm not sure that SARS even needed debt collectors before. It's collected its own debts. And one of those debt collectors turns out to be closely associated with the money laundering activities, allegedly, of one Jonas Makwakwa, who was suspended from SARS and then reinstated very controversially.
Who is Tom Moyane's deputy?
Who was Tom Moyane's deputy, in effect, yes.
And still is.
Yes, and so is now reinstated. So, and the Jonas Makwakwa whole saga has been, you know, has really been incredibly dodgily handled by Mr. Moyane. So that's one whole set of activities in the last few weeks which are deeply disturbing, and so it looks like he's trying to sort of place some contracts dodgily at the last minute before he gets booted up. The other reason is he's also launched into the former acting commissioner Ivan Pillay, again for the supposed rogue unit kind of stuff, also now at the last minute. And of course the third reason the guy needs to go is that it is amply evident that SARS's collection capacity is sort of very, very compromised.
That's perhaps why they need the debt collectors. But in this case, am I wrong to think that what happened was Jonas Makwakwa, people paid money into his account that were flagged as suspicious transactions by the Financial Intelligence Center. And this is one of these depositors is one of the people who now have a contract with SARS. Tim, does that not close the circle to you? It seems like an obvious case of influence peddling, to put it in a very nice way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, one of the uncontested allegations, or in the inquiry, one of the things that came up was that Jonas Makwakwa and his wife were stuffing enormous amounts of money into ATM machines, which I always think looks bad. You know what I mean? If you're, even if you're a really nice person, if you're taking huge, then they had to go. CNA for more envelopes because they ran out of envelopes.
And they had CCTV
which is really bad
footage, so it looks even worse.
yes. I mean, who doesn't bring enough envelopes to put,
to an ATM stuffing
to
exercise?
To an ATM stuffing exercise, yeah. No, we laugh about it, but it's very serious. I mean, this is really an absolute shocker. Because it kills. I mean, nobody likes paying tax. This is a grudge action by everybody in society, from the biggest to the smallest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your tax authority has to be impeccable, impeccable. Yep. Because otherwise, people just lose faith. They don't know why they are paying taxes. They get suspicious about why they, you know, what will happen to their tax money. Even though 99.9999% of it, you know, goes into the right spot and so on. So, it's I would give both of the SARS officials a week at most. I'm willing to
McCaw bet. And Moyani.
Yeah, and Moyani.
Well, that'd be fantastic. Because, Ron, the issue is, like Tim suggests, tax morality is down in this country. Yeah. Companies don't think they should be paying tax to a government like Jacob Zuma's in the past.
Yeah.
And certainly to an institution headed by someone like Tom Moyani, who's clearly not using the money effectively and seems to be covering up corruption in the case of his deputy. Is that a correct way to look at it?
Yeah, exactly. End of February, we had Cyril acting when he did the whole cabinet reshuffle. I think this is another time where we have to see him again. Like, stop walking and doing these great PR events for the ANC and stuff, and come and act on with regards to SARS and make a statement there. I mean, he's in charge of appointing the commission in the first place, and I think the head of SARS has to go. Tom Moyani, he's 65, he's reached retirement age. His contract comes to an end, is it next year? Somewhat. There's no point. Pay him out. He has to go to get that whole. Look at the confidence breathing into the system. Now, this is the last peg to do. Just get it off.
And we've got now an example of how to do it, because you know, Trump has fired his foreign minister by tweets.
We'll get to that. But Ron, why has Ramaphosa delayed firing Tom Moyani? What's the rationale for that?
On this one, I don't know. I mean, maybe getting Nene to settle in as a new finance minister. But this was the call. I mean, and Nene spoke about tax morality, so he's put it out there, and it's also been loads to mention about any personality changes. But I mean, it's clear as they come. Like, this is the in terms of getting Treasury right, getting the whole all our confidence like in line. This is the last thing. It is SARS, and that's where you have to go in there, especially in a country like this, right? That's going to need, it's be struggling for another year or two. This is the one place that you need to start.
Because SARS is a big fiscal risk.
Yeah,
guys,
that the under-collection on tax, which we've seen in the last 2-3 years, is not just about the economy at all. It's about the decline in SARS's own administrative efficiency, and as a result, linked to that, in tax morality.
Absolutely.
Why would anyone want to pay tax to these people?
So I mean, this panel of geniuses we have here, I mean, who would be best to take over SARS?
Nomination would be Ivan Pillay, because then Ivan Pillay could decide whether or not to prosecute himself. Which is always the, you know, the best.
What about Jonas? The great thing about
Pravin Gordhan, when he ran the, he totally turned around, transformed revenue collection in South Africa. He ran this incredibly tight ship for however many years it was, a dozen years. But he was an incredibly good administrator with a good political sort of strategic sense. You don't want a politician running it.
Yeah.
You want a chief exec commissioner person who is really, really good at running a large tax authority.
I just put a judge there.
They don't know how to run 15,000 people.
Almost like the CEO be a more like strong, but get someone like the position, the head, get someone of that we all have faith in, and just get a CEO to run the operations below them.
Maybe. So
the
next Dennis Davis.
Dennis Davis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the next question
you were going.
I don't think he's the right person. Yeah. He's a legal person. You need a seriously good strategic kind of administrator, not a politician,
not a
political sense, but not a judge, not a lawyer, not a politician,
someone who knows how to run
a revenue authority of 15,000 people. And I think, and of course has stature, because, you know, I mean, in any other country, even if Moyani were pure as the driven snow, his reputation is so compromised, he should have stepped down.
So do you think now that then that Nhlanhla Nene or Cyril Ramaphosa should fire Tom Moyani via Twitter, like Donald Trump did this week to Rex Tillerson? Guys, I think we have some footage that would be instructive on Donald Trump speaking this week.
Mr. President, why did you defy?
I've worked with Mike Pompeo now for quite some time. Tremendous energy, tremendous intellect. We're always on the same wavelength. The relationship has been very good, and that's what I need as Secretary of State. Rex and I have been talking about this for a long time. We got along actually quite well. But we disagreed on things. When you look at the Iran deal, I think it's terrible. I guess he fit. It was okay.
Yeah. So, so is that the treatment that Tomayani should get, Hillary? Do you think that that's what's needed? I mean, how is this man running a country? I mean, if that was our currency, the rand, it would be at 25.
The only thing that can sometimes make you feel better about the kind of huge structural problems that South Africa faces is that some other countries are just run by lunatics.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, the weird thing is that it's not as though Rex Tillerson was, you know, some kind of butterfly from, you know, he came from ExxonMobil, you know what I mean? I mean, so it's disturbing that Trump can't see eye to eye with, you know, with the head of an enormous oil company, you know, it's kind of shocking.
He's unraveling foreign policy, which is, I mean, he's sort of quite carefully put in place foreign policy, for example, on Iran and as for North Korea. Yes. He's kind of running his own show there, completely with no regard to the status of the U.S. in the world or what the implications of these kinds of, like, off-the-cuff decisions are. No wonder he didn't want to listen, to remind him that this wasn't very rational.
So, Ron, do you think, I mean, what is the prospect for the dollar? How should we think about the rand versus the dollar in the context of a country that's run like that?
You know, they've always said, like, the dollar should be in a period for strengthening. There's 4 rate hikes expected next week. But as long as Trump is there, Trump is not a man for a strong U.S. dollar. He's not going to strengthen the U.S. dollar. So I think the rand should, well, I mean, they will raise rates next week or somewhere, about 20, whatever points they do in the States. But I think the dollar will be on the back foot for a long time, just for given these trade wars and so on. And the rand is set for a good season. I mean, he's a terrible president for the U.S. dollar. And I think actually he kind of benefits from a weak dollar, given his pension for property and so on. So I think it's a weak dollar under Trump. I can't see a strong dollar under his term as president.
So Tim, do we short rand hedge stocks now and just buy local shares?
Yeah, I mean it's a factor. You know what I mean? I mean I don't think it's a I don't think that the, you know, the U.S. System is still very, you know, the president is not the only, you know, force in, obviously, in U.S. politics. So you know, I didn't foresee, you know, sort of major disasters or anything. So I don't think the dollar's going to really, going to make big moves. But the point is that it was, your anticipation that it was going to strengthen as the interest rates, as American interest rates increased. That, I think, is off the table now.
Guys, you've heard it here first. Join us next week for some more great insights on Editing Aloud.